Hello, and welcome to Silver Threads, a weekly program of information on how you can make your senior year shine. I'm Kathy Van Skoik. I usually pick up a copy of In Good Health. It's the Rochester Genesee Valley Healthcare newspaper, along with the most recent 55 Plus magazine, on my way out of Wegmans. Not really expecting to find a topic. However, the August issue offered an entire section on the golden years, with a potpourri of topics including potential dangers when walking dogs, fighting fraud, Social Security, and Medicare question and answers, plus suggestions for finding in-home care, OTC hearing aids soon available in drugstores, and bonus benefits of the Meals on Wheels program. I'm going to begin with, for seniors, walking the dog can sometimes be a dangerous thing. Fall-related bone breaks involving senior dog walkers has risen substantially. This is by Deborah Jean Sargent. Owning a dog can provide a lot of motivation to get out and walk. While that's great for your health, dog walking can raise the risk of falling, especially if you're an older adult. A study recently published in the JAMA Surgery looked at 100 hospital emergency rooms nationwide. The number of fall-related bone breaks involving senior dog walkers has risen substantially for more than a decade, from 1,671 in 2004 to 4,396 in 2017. Of those involved with the study, 79% were women who, because of their smaller bone structure, are more at risk for bone breaks. The most common broken bone was the hip at 17%, but more than 50% broke an upper body bone, including shoulder, arm, hands, wrists, and fingers. Nearly one-third required hospital admission. The researchers blame both dog manners and owner conditioning. Falls are the number one risk as we're elderly, said Madeline Nezimis, certified personal trainer, certified in fitness nutrition, and owner of Studio 22 Personal Training in East Rochester. Many elderly people who experience a hip fracture never quite regain the level of health they experienced previously. Some also become so deconditioned that they can no longer live independently. Nizamis recommends increasing core strength and leg strength to improve stability, which can help prevent a fall. Do some weighted exercise, she said. Exercise related to functional movement like squats or standing and sitting repeatedly from a chair can pay off. She also suggested wearing supportive footwear and paying careful attention while walking. Stay in an area where you know the route, Nizamis said. When you have walked it before, you're less likely to have a fall then. If you're going to a new area with a dog, you are at higher risk. Kevin Silverman, certified personal trainer with Brighton Personal Training in Brighton, said the following a balance and strengthening program can reduce the risk of falls. When your core and legs are stronger, your balance is more efficient, Silverman said. If the dog pulls you in a certain way or the leash wraps around your leg, you can't completely eliminate the risk of falling. But if your muscles are conditioned and your body has the flexibility it needs, you can mitigate the results if you're injured. The other side of the coin is the dog's influence on the possibility of falling. If you're in a market for a new dog, consider your choice carefully. Large, powerful dogs may be much harder to control than a smaller dog, but the dog's personality also makes a difference. Different dogs have different degrees of prey drive, said Becky Renee, owner of Woof to Hoof Certified Professional Dog Training in Rochester. Some are driven by anything that moves. The dog's breed can influence these tendencies and the need for exercise. Working dogs like German Shepherds, for example, require much more exercise than dogs bred as companion dogs like the King Charles Spaniel. Renee also encourages dog walkers to get the right equipment. Retractable leashes and extremely long leads can contribute to falls. A 6-foot leash suffices, she said. Renee likes the easy walk harness as it cinches up and self-corrects dogs if they forget their training and pull. Dog training can make walks much safer. Leash walking is one of the most important things a dog can learn how to do, Renee said. They shouldn't be pulling, playing, or biting at it. It's an important thing. An older dog can learn how to do it, so you can't teach an old dog new tricks. As she walks her dogs, she checks in with them, meaning she makes eye contact or otherwise makes the dog aware of her presence. That helps prevent the distractions that can cause pulling. Training also helps the dog know what to expect and where it should walk in relationship to the owner, not darting around. You have to have patience to get the dog to walk correctly, Renee said. I don't use anything harsh. You don't need to pull the dog around or cause discontent. A walk is a bonding, pleasant experience for you and the dog. It takes a little work, but you can both get there. And now, something I hadn't heard of before, hearing aids coming soon to a drugstore near you, by Deborah Jean Sargent also. The Over-the-Counter Hearing Aid Act, signed by President Trump in 2017, has started the process toward hearing aids sold directly to consumers with self-identified mild to moderate hearing loss. The Food and Drug Administration has until 2020 to finalize the rules on guidelines as to what qualifies as an over-the-counter or OTC product. Hearing amplification devices or systems, also called personal amplification sound products or PSAPs, are considered the entry-level devices by people like Michelle Gross, member of the Heritage Loss Association of America Rochester chapter and a resident in Brighton. Cross said that the general public often mistakes a PSAP for OTCs or even prescribed hearing aids. When they see an ad in the paper, they don't realize what they're looking at, she said. Although some ads for PSAPs state these are not hearing aids, Gross said that the wording might be more for reducing stigma instead of providing clarity. Some PSAP ads don't mention hearing aids, but stress that the devices are for recreation, such as hunting, birding, or watching television. While PSAPs do amplify sound, most don't have some of the safety features to protect a person's hearing, like sound limits, Gross said. Their frequencies aren't adjusted to the people's needs. They make things louder without any real control. Though they are as cheap as $30 to $200, they may not help a person with hearing impairment better follow a conversation or at a restaurant understand their soft-spoken granddaughter. Gross said that the OTC hearing aids are acute hearing aids with the features a hearing aid would have. Since there's no audiologist or hearing aid dispenser involved, the cost is lower. But that also removes the benefits of the skill of the professionals. Carolyn M. Puglio, Director of Audiology with Hearing Aid Works Audiology, PLLC in Rochester, doesn't view the emergencies of OTCs as an entirely negative trend. It will introduce people with mild hearing loss into the world of what hearing aids could do to help them and transition into care from an audiologist, Puglio said. She also said that OTCs don't have built-in compression. Hearing aids work pitch by pitch and compress loud sounds so the user doesn't experience further hearing loss, traits an OTC doesn't have. It's not going to be finely tuned and adjusted like from a digital prescription hearing aid, Puglio said. They won't be addressing hearing loss issues without creating a whole bunch of feedback. While OTCs might provide a stepping stone for some people with mild to moderate loss, which is the recommendation for these devices, Pulio fears that some with more profound hearing loss may think that since the OTC device doesn't help them, there's no use in trying prescribed hearing aids. Seeing an audiologist can also help a person discover what's causing the problem, which may be as simple and remediable as built-up wax, fluid behind the eardrum, or other problem that's hampering their hearing. We might recommend an OTC for financial reasons after they have an evaluation to make sure nothing else is wrong, Pulio said. There are a lot of health issues that can go with hearing issues, said OTC. Won't help a person with that. Going the OTC route also doesn't provide device maintenance, repair, cleaning, or adjustments. Buying a hearing aid is unlike picking up a pair of cheater reading glasses from the drugstore, where it's easy to sense if the lenses compensate for poor near vision. Hearing and vision works much differently. I'm very nearsighted, but my retina works fine, said Ron D'Angelo, doctor of audiology at Clear Choice Hearing and Balance in Greece and Brighton. It's the focusing mechanisms that doesn't work. For hearing loss, it's the inner ear, like the retina, is damaged. That's why you can't have one-size-fits-all approach, because it varies with the patient. The preset aspects of OTCs may or may not help. Also, the fit of the device may not work for the person buying it, since it must physically fit the ear. Many think of hearing loss as a quality of life issue, but it also bears medical effects, D'Angelo said. Hearing loss can affect balance and has been associated with greater incidences of dementia. Auditory deprivation is a real thing, he said. Naturally, the high-end hearing aids can cost thousands of dollars. However, there is quite a range for what a customer fit hearing aid can cost, D'Angelo said. There might be financing available or a payment plan that is approachable by the patient. If something doesn't work, it's not worth anything. If it does, it's worth every penny. And we're going now to Savvy Senior by Jim Miller, looking for at-home care and how to hire an in-home caregiver. And this is in response to a question. Dear Looking, finding a good in-home caregiver for an elderly parent can be challenging. How can you find one that's reliable and trustworthy, as well as someone your parent likes and is comfortable with? Here are some tips. Know your needs. Before you start the task of looking for an in-home caregiver, your first step is to determine the level of care your parent needs. This can pinpoint the type of help she or he need. For example, if she only needs help with the daily tasks like shopping, cooking, doing laundry, bathing, or dressing, a homemaker or personal care aide will do. But if she needs health care services, there are home health aides that may do all of those things a homemaker does, plus they also have training in administering medications, changing wound dressings, and other medically related duties. Home health aides often work under a nurse's supervision. Once you settle on a level of care, you then need to decide how many hours of assistance she'll need. For example, does your mom need someone to come in just mornings a week to help her cook, clean, run errands, or perhaps bathe? Or does she need more continuous care that requires daily visits or a full-time aide? After you determine her needs, there are two ways in which you can go about hiring someone, either through an agency or on your own to hire someone directly. Hiring through an agency. Hiring a personal care or home health aide through an agency is the safest and easiest option, but it's more expensive. Costs typically run anywhere between $14 and $24 an hour, depending on where you live and the qualifications of the aide. How it works is you pay the agency and they handle everything, including an assessment of your mom's needs, assigning appropriately trained and screened staff to care for her and filling a fill-in on one of the days that the aide cannot come. Some of the drawbacks, however, are that you may not have much input into the selection of the caregiver, and the caregivers may change or alternate, which can cause disruption. To find a home care agency in your mom's area, ask for referrals through friends, family, or doctor's offices, or use the Home Care Locator service tool at payingforseniorcare.com. There you can click on Finding Quality Affordable Care. In addition, Medicare offers a home health compare tool at medicare.gov/home-health-compare to help you find and compare home health care agencies. You also need to be aware that Original Medicare does not cover in-home caregiving services unless your mom is receiving doctor's-ordered skilled nursing or therapy services at home, too. But if your mom is in a certain Medicare Advantage plan or is low-income and qualifies for Medicaid, she may be eligible for some coverage. Hiring directly. Hiring an independent caregiver on your own is the other option and less expensive, typically costing between $12 and $20 per hour. Hiring directly also gives you more control over who you hire so that you can choose someone who you feel is right for your mom. But be aware that if you do hire someone on your own, you become the employer, so there's no agency support to fall back on if a problem occurs or if the aide doesn't show. You are responsible for paying payroll taxes and any worker-related injuries that may happen. If you choose this option, make sure you check the aide's references thoroughly and do a criminal background check, which you can do through sites like eNannySource.com. To find someone, ask for referrals or try elder care matching services like care.com or carelinks.com. That's carelinx.com. Or for a fee, an aging life care expert. Well, one reason for the reference and the criminal background check is to lessen the chance of exploitation or fraud. And speaking of fraud, our next section is Ask the Social Security Office. Communities fighting fraud. Older people are at greater risk of fraud and often other forms of financial exploitation. The United States Postal Service has seen an increase in mail fraud and is promoting community strength and fraud awareness as a way to prevent abuse. Social Security agrees. You can help you or your more vulnerable loved ones fight fraud. You or a loved one might receive an advertisement in the mail, but it could be from a private company or even a scammer. United States law prohibits people or non-government businesses from using words or emblems that mislead others. Their advertising can't lead people to believe that they represent, are somehow affiliated with, or endorsed or approved by Social Security. Scammers commonly target people who are looking for Social Security program and benefit information. If you receive misleading information about Social Security, send the complete advertisement, including the envelope it came in, to Office of the Inspector General, Fraud Hotline, Social Security Administration, P.O. Box 17768, Baltimore, Maryland 21235. We also receive reports where someone pretending to be a Social Security employee has contacted members of the public. The intent of this type of call may be to steal your identity and money from your bank accounts. They may state that your Social Security number will be suspended, or they may demand immediate payment. The caller generally asks you for personal information such as your Social Security number, date of birth, your mother's maiden name, or your bank or financial account information. You should not provide any of this information to these individuals. It is possible that a Social Security employee may contact you to follow up on a previous application for Social Security benefits or follow up on another business that you initiated with Social Security. Remember, Social Security employees will never threaten you or demand any kind of payment in exchange for services. It's important that you report any and all fraud. This can only strengthen your communities and your family. You can report Social Security fraud at oig.ssa.gov/report. And going on now to Wheels on Meals, a program we're all familiar with probably. Wheels delivers an extra health bonus for seniors. Meals on Wheels might do more than deliver hot food to isolated seniors. New research suggests that it can serve as an early warning system for declining health. The study included Meals on Wheels drivers in Guernsey County in Ohio and San Diego County, who were trained to use a mobile app to alert care coordinators if the drivers had a concern or noticed a change in a senior's condition. The care coordinators then followed up with seniors to provide support and connect them with health and community services. Over the 12-month study period, the drivers submitted 429 alerts for 189 clients. The most frequent alerts were for changes in health at 56%, self-care or personal safety at 12%, and mobility at 11%. Follow-ups on the alerts led to 132 referrals, with the most for self-care, health, and care management coming next, according to the researchers at West Health Institute at Brown University in Rhode Island and Meals on Wheels America. The study was published recently in the Journal of the American Geriatric Society. West Health and Meals on Wheels America plan to expand the research program to as many as 30 Meals on Wheels sites across the United States that include about 40,000 seniors. By collaborating with Meals on Wheels America, we have developed a safe, cost-effective, and scalable program to preemptively identify and address concerns that too often result in deterioration of a senior's medical condition or pose a major safety risk, said physician Zia Aga, chief medical officer at the West Health Institute. We're excited. Learnings from this research program are now being implemented across the country within Meals on Wheels America's expanded program that will probably positively impact as many seniors as possible. And now a question-answer article. Question: I will rely on Medicare when I retire. Can you explain the different parts of Medicare? It's always good to review this. Different parts of Medicare cover your specific needs. There are four parts, all of which work in tandem to deliver services. Part A is hospital insurance. It helps pay for inpatient care in the hospital or skilled nursing facility following a hospital stay, some home health care and hospice care. Part B is medical insurance. It helps pay for doctor services and many other medical services and supplies that hospital insurance doesn't cover. Part C is Medicare Advantage. If you have a Medicare Part A and B, you can also join a Medicare Advantage plan. Private companies offer Medicare Advantage plans, which are approved by Medicare. These plans generally help you pay the medical costs not covered by Medicare Parts A and B. Then there's Part D. This is prescription drug coverage. It helps pay for medications doctors prescribe for treatment. Social Security disability. There's another question about SSI disability and Social Security supplemental. Here's the answer. Social Security Disability Insurance, or SSDI, is based on prior earnings. SSDI is financed through the taxes you pay into the Social Security program. To be eligible for SSDI benefit, the worker must earn sufficient credits based on taxable work to be insured for Social Security purposes. SSDI benefits are payable to eligible blind or disabled workers, the widow or widowers of the disabled worker, or adults disabled since childhood. SSI is disability payments made based on financial need to adults or children who are disabled or blind, have limited income and resources, meet the living arrangement requirements, and are otherwise eligible. SSI is a program financed through general revenues. For more information, visit www.socialsecurity.gov. And the last question, can a non-citizen get Supplemental Security Income, or SSI? The laws and regulations concerning non-citizens differ for Social Security and SSI programs. Social Security administrators both, even though they have different eligibility requirements. Some non-citizens do qualify for SSI. See Supplemental Security Income, or SSI, for non-citizens at www.socialsecurity.gov/PUBS. Well, a potpourri of topics indeed. Yet, I think all pertinent contributions to overall health and wellness for those of us in our oft referred to as golden years. I particularly appreciated the offering on fraud. Even in the face of multiple sources of caution and warning, seniors are bilked out of millions of dollars in various fraud and identity theft schemes annually. So please be wary. Never give out your Social Security number or any of your banking information to an unsolicited caller. Thanks for listening, and until next week, I'm Kathy Van Skoit. You've been listening to Silver Threads, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. The audio producer for the show is Maureen Rich, and I'm Kathy Van Skoik. I hope you will join me again next week for more information and updates for making the best of your silver years. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.